They may be scattered around, but I do believe we have a quorum. We unfortunately don't have all of the bills in your folder, and so there's a little scramble going on. But the first one we have here, Senator Bonhoff.
Can you jump
to it right now?
Absolutely. Our pleasure.
I'll call on you and Superintendent Anderson from Wayzata, and come forward and present Santa Fe 95.
Thank you.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm here with the Wayzata School District today, which I represent and also Madam Chair represents. We're here to propose a bill that would allow the Wayzata School District to have access to the Alternative Facilities Program. And just as some background, and I'm actually going to ask Mr. Nauman to tell the committee, for those particularly who are new this year, just a little bit about what the Alternative Facilities Program is, because I think it's complicated, and unless the members think they do know what the program is, but just a little bit about the what it takes to be a part of it. It has to do with how many square feet you have, how many years old your buildings are, and why some districts are and some districts aren't. And then also I just wanted the members to know that last year we actually passed this legislation. It was in the final bill. It had planned to be passed, and it was caught up in that last minute. Senator Stumpf is nodding because he remembers. It was caught up in that final moment where we couldn't get a bill passed in the House. And so we had completed our work in the Senate, and this was part of the final package. And so this, we are bringing it back one more time to see if we can't get it done this year. So, Madam Chair, if it's all right with you, let Mr. Nauman just speak briefly about what the program is.
Mr. Nauman.
So, Madam Chair and members, Senator Bonhoff, the Alternative Facilities Bonding and Levying Program is a program that goes back to, I think it's about a 1993 vintage. Yes, and it was originally put in place for the large school districts for maintenance and maintenance to their facilities. So at the time that it was originally passed, members of the legislature felt that it was somewhat difficult for these large school districts to essentially get a debt service bond voted on and approved by the voters at the time, because it's not quite as exciting to approve tuck pointing as it is to approve a brand new building. And so this program was put in place, and originally it was just the largest school districts. And then subsequately, our definition of how we discern which are the largest school districts has been adjusted. So the criteria currently is that to be eligible for this program, a school district must have at least 66 students per grade, and then one of two criteria, over 1850 square feet of space and an average building age of 15 or greater, 15 years, or 1.5 million square feet and an average age of 35 or greater. So there's a dual threshold there that allows you to be eligible. Once you are eligible, school districts can choose a pay-as-you-go approach, and that'll be relevant to today's discussion. So they levy for what they need in a given year, or they can take out bonds and levy to pay those bonds off over time.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so now what I'd like to do is turn it over to the superintendent of Wayzata Schools to talk about why they're here today.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present on this bill this afternoon. I'd also like to thank Senator Bonner for introducing the bill and for giving us this opportunity here today as well. I'm also here today with our Director of Finance and Business, Mr. Jim Westrom. And
can you say your name?
Put your name on the record.
Thank you.
Position. Thank
and I'm Chase Anderson, Superintendent for Wayzata Schools. As you know, Senate File 95 would allow Wayzata Public Schools to qualify early for the state's alternative facilities bonding and levy program. To qualify for the program, districts must have over 1.85 million square feet of building space and an average age of 15 years or older, or 1.5 million square feet of space and an average age of 35 years or older. Wayzata has approximately 1.65 million square feet of building space and a current average of about 31 years. Like other districts that have sought and been granted early eligibility, we are seeking early eligibility into the program for the following four major reasons. First, today's economy presents a tremendous opportunity for the district. Interest rates and construction costs are extremely low, which would allow the district to complete pending projects at a lower cost. This translates into direct savings to our taxpayers through lower property tax levies if the projects are completed in the next 1 to 3 years when prices and interest rates are still competitive. The cost of these projects will likely increase in the next 5 years, which will result in higher taxes for our residents if we do not become eligible for 5 years. Second, there's no financial impact for the state in this legislation. The funds for Wayzata's participation in the Alternative Facilities Program would come entirely from the local levy. There is no cost to the state or no increase in state aid to fund this proposed legislation. There was a fiscal note attached to this bill that showed cost to the state of about $1.5 million for fiscal year 2012. This was not a direct cost to the state, but a reduction in the amount of the state could withhold from the district because of the 48.6% property tax recognition shift enacted by the 2010 legislature. To eliminate the impact of the fiscal note, the district plans to implement a pay-as-you-go strategy rather than selling bonds. This change will still allow the district to qualify for the program and will eliminate the cost of the state. Third, we are currently using a small portion of our general fund budget to cover the cost of annual operating capital expenses. The ability to access alternative facilities funds will free up dollars in the general fund and allow our district to more effectively manage its budget during these challenging financial times. Finally, and most importantly, Wayzata's participation in the Alternative Facilities Program would not increase property taxes for local residents. Our district currently levies about $3.2 million annually for health and safety and deferred maintenance projects. We would simply shift this amount to pay for the alternative facilities projects and not levy any additional tax burden on our residents. The cost to local taxpayers would be the same as it currently is, and we would be able to accelerate repair and maintenance projects in a more favorable economic environment. We believe that passage of Senate File 95 will represent a win-win situation for our district and our community. We will be able to repair and maintain our facilities that are currently being deferred until we become eligible in 5 years, and we'll be able to do it without increasing local property taxes. We would greatly appreciate your support of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Would you like to comment or add to that, or just respond to questions?
Jim Westrom, Executive Director of Finance and Business. I'll just respond to any questions that anyone may have.
Are there any questions from members? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually first have a question for Mr. Nauman, and then actually for the panel. Mr. Nauman, you mentioned that the Alternative Facilities Revenue Program would allow districts to choose, if they qualify, pay-as-you-go or levy for bonds. Now, if I know it's not the case here, but if they were to levy for bonds, would that require a voter referendum?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, no.
Okay, so
no, the purpose of the program is to provide facilities authority, and it does not require a voter approval.
For the reasons you said, difficult to get voter approval for tuck pointing. Okay, great. And then, Madam Chair, if I might ask one question. But if I understood your testimony correctly, you are not going to be levying for bonds. You are going to be maybe, would it be using, having more flexibility in your current levy to be allowed to use for maintenance. Is that just more flexibility in what's currently levied?
Madam Chair and Senator, yes, that would be correct.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Regan.
So I'd just like to amplify Mr. Nauman's response to Senator Brown. In addition to the local board approval, it also, the district with local input has to come up with a 10-year plan, and this also is approved or subject to approval by the State Department of Education. So there's a number of procedural hoops to show that there's a long-term plan.
And Madam Chair and Senator Wicker, I know you sat in this chair some years ago when one of your districts needed the same exception, and so there is precedent for making this kind of exception.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Bonhoff, appreciate your bringing this bill. I have a question maybe for you or others on the committee or maybe even Mr. Nauman. And we have seen, as you mentioned, other bills similar to this who have asked for some consideration. And as I'm looking at this dual threshold structure where you have to have 1.5 million square feet and 35 years of age or 1.85 million square feet and 15 years of age average, it seems like there would be an opportunity to create some kind of interpolation that would not require us to have exceptions to the law made every time somebody comes and says, well, our buildings are only 31 years old and we only have 17 or, you know, 1.7 million square feet, and so can we get an exception? Is that something that's ever been considered?
Senator Hand, I think that comes up. It's raised about every year or every time one of these things come up, but it's never addressed. And, you know, maybe that is something that we could take a good, serious look at and see if it's well, you know, some districts, you know, had newer buildings. That there is just a wide range. I think part of the challenge that Wayzata did, they built a new high school. It's one of their biggest buildings, was newer, but that's getting older. But some of their older buildings, if they had, they would have qualified if they were in the original buildings. But one new building, they still have old buildings that need to be maintained. So there's different circumstances, and I think we should, every policy that we have and put in law, I think, is worthy of revisiting and examining what's whether it's something that is the best interest of going forward. Okay. Mr. Nauman, do you want to get
Madam
in the middle
Chair,
of this dialogue?
I'm not
here?
So much get in the middle, but just to amplify a little bit about Senator Hand's point. I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago, Senator Wicker will correct me if I get this wrong, the North St. Paul School District chose to close a building or two, and the concern was that they would become ineligible for this program as a result of closing some buildings, which I think probably made sense in the local district. There was a small moment of savior on this because they were originally made eligible through this particular mechanism as a special exception, and we thankfully recalled that. They would have been ineligible had it not been for the special exception. So am I recalling that correct?
Yes.
So there, it can go both ways.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, as I was listening to the testimony, was thinking as we talk about flexibility, that really given there is no tax impact either on the local level or at the state, that it does seem like our laws ought to be structured in such a way that in fact they wouldn't have to be sitting here.
Any further discussion? If not, we will put this on the table for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Very good. Thank you.
You'll notice who the co-authors are on the bill as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Is Senator Limmer here? Yes, there he is. Senator Limmer has Senate File 289. Speaking of special revenue streams.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm going to be joined today by Dean Olson from the Osseo School District and Roger Schaefbauer from the Wayzata School District, and then Valerie Dossman might come and go as need be. The bill before us, Senate File 287, for those of you who have been around here a little while, you've heard this bill before. Matter of fact, I think you've heard it off and on for over 8 years. And just last year, it was part of the Omnibus Education Bill, and we all know where that bill went. But I would like the Senate to reconsider the bill that we had last year, Senate File 280, that's represented in Senate File 287. It's a means to streamline capital expenditures regarding health and safety issues of our school districts. It would enhance the ability of school districts to comply with regulatory obligations and better meet the expectations of students, employees, and the communities they serve. It streamlines the levy approval process to reduce administrative burdens on districts, as well as the MDE. It clarifies allowable uses and restrictions without expanding the scope of the health and safety levy. It would permit districts to identify and correct hazards without waiting for a citation order, and assign expenditures to the appropriate budget code, providing costs per a uniform finance, accounting, and reporting standards category. It would also establish a formal process of appeal and eliminate unpromulgated mandates by the Minnesota Department of Education that would jeopardize revenue approval. Madam Chair, before we get too deep in the weeds on
Madam
this
Chair.
Bill.
Senator Stone.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer,
yes.
Excuse me, but I think you were saying Senate File 287, and I think it's Senate File 289.
289, I'm sorry. Okay. I can't even read my own writing anymore. Now my wife is right. thank you, Senator Stump. I would like to let you know that the department is in favor of the legislation before us. They've agreed to the language, and it has been carefully worked out. There are no costs. However, there is a technical amendment that I'd like to bring our attention to. This would be an oral amendment. If I could direct your attention to page 4, line 21. On line 21 of page 4, after the word lead at the beginning of the sentence, the words in water, paint, soil, and toys, that makes reference to a lead testing reference in this bill that would be allowable and encouraged, but simply to take the words in water, paint, soil, and tests and toys and have it stricken from this bill. And I'll stand for questions if you wish.
Well, Senator Limmer, I would consider that an author's amendment, that that's the shape you would like to have it in. Is there somebody that's willing to offer that oral amendment on his behalf?
Offer that amendment.
Senator Nelson moves the amendment on page 4, line 21, to remove the line, the words in water, paint, soil, and toys. Is there any discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I would like to introduce Dean Olson from the Osseo School District. This bill really was kind of a brainchild of Mr. Olson's, and I think we should open, at least listen to him first on the description of the bill.
Very good. Congratulations. If this one works, we may need some more brainchild proposals here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Limmer. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dean Olson. For the last 17 years, I've been served as the health and safety coordinator for Osseo Area Schools. I'm very pleased to be here today in support of Senate File 289, which will improve the process used to fund school safety projects under Minnesota Statute 123B.57. The health and safety levy program has become extremely cumbersome over the years as more and more restrictions have been added. The administrative burden on our district has increased dramatically since I've started. The goal of this legislation is to reduce some of the inefficiencies that have been created and eliminate restrictions that unnecessarily inhibit school safety. It will reduce the amount of information that must be submitted to the Department of Education for project approval by only requiring what is necessary to determine if a project is allowable. For example, asbestos abatement costs are allowable. We've gone from reporting one amount for the entire district to separating costs to individual buildings to now having to provide specific room numbers, square footages, and material types. When we asked the Department of Ed why they needed all the additional detail, they said that it was so they could evaluate the reasonableness of the cost. I appreciate their concern, but I believe that is more our responsibility at the local level to take bids and to get those costs in order. It will also replace the annual requirement for school board approval of the Department of Education's health and safety summary page with a one-time requirement that districts adopt a health and safety policy. The policy would carry a lot more weight than a checklist that basically is approved on the consent agenda every year. It will eliminate requirements to attend Department of Education training as a prerequisite for project approval. Offering training and management assistance is fine, but we believe they shouldn't be required. And many of us have already achieved a higher level of training. That's what's being offered. And as a certified safety professional, I don't necessarily need the additional help in identifying hazards. It will help to expedite our response to indoor air quality concerns by eliminating the requirement to submit an engineering study prior to removing mold. If you can smell it or see it, you have a mold problem. Some materials can't be decontaminated, and mold testing is still an inexact science. The longer we wait to remove it, the more potential there is for occupants to be exposed. It will also allow us to be much more proactive in our approach to safety. Under the current rules, the Department of Education requires evidence of an OSHA citation or fire marshal's order before approving certain projects. We shouldn't need to be written up by a fire inspector to get funding to replace a fire alarm panel or an emergency light. These changes would empower school safety professionals like myself and safety committees in the buildings to identify and correct hazards on their own. The bottom line is these changes will save districts across the state time and money. They will also help us to provide a safer environment for our students and staff. I'd like to thank the committee for the time today and would be happy to answer any questions if I can.
Thank you very much. I'm tempted to tell a story, but I shouldn't, but it was a story from a superintendent telling about the filing of the asbestos reports and what in fact happened or didn't happen to that report. Anyway, it seemed that It seemed that the inspector had been down to that school district and he'd been treated to some special pastries from the local bakery, and when he filed the report, he was also going to be coming up later and seeking a maximum effort load. So he tucked a couple of those pastries in with the asbestos report, and checked later, and he hadn't gotten the pastries, but they found some, I think, a good penicillin factory in the corner with all the stacks of the asbestos reports. So there's some need for some modification of all of the reporting, and I think it's probably worthy at both ends. So I think you've done a good job with this. Is there anybody here from the department that could verify that? And put on record that you have reviewed and do support this? And I'm sure that story was years ago, so it's no reflection of current administration. That was not my intent. So, Mr. Shackleton.
Thank you. Brian Shackleton, Department of Education. And we have reviewed the language, and we do.
You support it?
We support it, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking at the fiscal note, and I know Senator Limmer has been working on this for a long time. The fiscal note up in the on the front first page talks about fiscal impacts, and they have all the no's checked, and yet it seems like one of it seems like in the past any change to this area, the health and safety area, created huge fiscal impacts, and it seems like we've done a little magic here. I'm not sure exactly how, but right toward the end of the explanation, it talks about, you know, the swimming pool hazards, and it talks about without this documentation, it is assumed that costs for kitchen and swimming pool compliance projects would increase substantially. I'm wondering, can someone explain how we've washed out the costs of what seems to be, at least to me, a more broadening opportunity for the use of health and safety revenues?
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, I'd be glad to try to respond to that. We've actually worked very hard to eliminate anything that would be an expansion or an addition to the program. Actually, the first we've introduced this legislation for several years, and initially it did include actually a lot of programs that aren't currently in here. Asbestos replacement, which was wiped out a few years ago, ergonomics, some of those other key things. And originally our bill included all of that, get that back, really have more opportunities to use the levy to be proactive in our districts because of the costs that were involved, and the financial conditions, those just weren't able to move forward. So that's why we spent a long time working with the department last year, directly with them in several meetings until we came to agreement on something that wouldn't reflect any costs. And so I'm not sure that I can respond specifically to the swimming pool hazard, but that was our intent to not add anything this time. So.
Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up on In taking out or deleting what seemed to be the cost drivers, would we be restricting districts from using the health and safety levy for those areas? I guess I'm wondering by removing certain provisions, have we actually eliminated opportunities for school districts to use it, to use the health and safety levy?
Madam Chair, Senator, I'm not aware of any. In fact, I should point out that one of the pieces of our legislation talked about assigning projects and costs to the appropriate UFARS code. Right now, a lot of things are divided up, but we did, in our meeting with the Department of Education, talk about if we move things even out of 352, which is the one capped area, that would result in an increase, because then you could levy more because it's not in the capped category anymore.
Senator Stump, I'm looking at the paragraph that I think you're talking about. It said the basis for funding food code and swimming pool hazards shall be orders from a Minnesota state agency only or a local government body under contract. Without that documentation, it is assumed that costs for these compliance projects would increase substantially. So there is, it looks like there still is some, when you do a project, it is based on some order that has been given. But they're not seeing that there's additional cost because of that.
Madam Chair?
I don't know if I'm interpreting that correctly, but Ms. Doslin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doslin, and I represent the Osseo School District. And Senator Stump, I didn't hear what page and line you were referring to, but one of the intentions of doing the bill draft, it does look like there's a lot of deletions and a lot of additions in the bill, but our intention was to just clean up the statute so that what the health and safety coordinators in the school districts know, it's all in one section of what they can use health and safety revenue for and what they can't use it for. So, again, I didn't hear what page and line you were referring to, but...
Well, Ms. Doslin, it's in the fiscal note. It's page three,
okay.
And it's the third paragraph above the expenditure and revenue formula line. Makes reference to food code and swimming pool hazards.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't appear that they can go forward without some order.
Right.
So it,
well, Madam Chair, I would think that if you've accomplished this, you have done an amazing job, because I don't know how many years we've tried to figure out how even a small word change ended up driving a lot of cost or restricting the opportunity for districts to use it. So, congratulations.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Senator Torres-Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, Senator Limmer, about the provision on line 2.5. It says that the Commissioner of Education shall not make eligibility for health and safety revenue contingent to district's compliance status. I know the department already said that they are they support the language. I'm just curious about, so this becomes, they are automatically eligible for this, and there are the, what is the department's authority to review this and to really work with districts in terms of compliance? Are there other provisions that are just not stated here, or I'm not seeing? It's just that the commissioner is being removed to some extent, I presume, or not, or totally. So the districts automatically receive this funding without?
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
And Senator Torres-Reed, I'm going to have Mr. Olson try to
thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Mr. Olson.
As far as the section that you're referring to, basically the contingency that we're talking about is that a lot of it relates back to the management assistance program that we talked about earlier, and we wanted to make it certain that a district's levy authority wouldn't be jeopardized because they didn't participate in that management assistance program that basically comes in to several buildings a year and looks at compliance issues, OSHA compliance, fire code, identifies hazards, and unlike any other inspector that we deal with, and we deal with the state fire marshal, insurance inspectors, and a whole host of others, that one in particular, we're required to take their specific findings right down to an extension cord plugged into an extension cord and present that to the school board for review as part of our attachment 90. Well, it used to be 99, it was 10. Our legislation would eliminate that. So really it was more of just a clarification that there were never there wasn't language in the old statute that required anything like this before you would qualify for levy, if I'm understanding your question properly.
Okay. Yeah.
Not changing anything, just clarifying that status, compliance status, and those inspections, a district would still qualify in any.
Senator Torres-Reed, I think the first, if you look at the beginning of the bill, they do have to make application for the use for the projects to go forward on this. This was not eliminating any approval from the department. It just eliminates the necessity for one kind of participation.
Madam Chair, Senator, I just wanted to clarify that as far as the training piece, there were three specific areas that the department was requiring that districts participate in a Department of Education-sponsored training, machine guarding. There was one on indoor air quality. And so basically, if you wanted to levy money for indoor air quality, you had to go to their one day, or is it half day?
Half day
training on indoor air quality. Yet there's people that are out there that have much higher levels of training, so that, you know, to require somebody to go through that one just to get a certificate number so that they could levy for indoor air quality seemed unreasonable. And so, did I miss one? I'm sorry, Roger.
Just the machine guarding.
Yeah, machine guarding, ergonomics, indoor air quality.
So, Ms. Dozen.
Thank you.
Thank
and
you.
Just to clarify, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think Mr. Olson means to indicate that people working in the health and safety programs in these districts have that training and have that certification because they have to be OSHA certified and things such as that. So it's being done by people within the district who have the knowledge and the experience and the education.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson, did I?
My question's been answered.
Okay,
thank you.
Senator Hinn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Limmer, I also have a question that goes back to the fiscal note. And I was a little confused as I was reading through the assumptions, and there were a number of assumptions that were indicating that without certain things being addressed in the bill, that costs for projects would increase substantially. I refer to the paragraph right above the one we were talking about with respect to food code and swimming pool hazards. With this has to do with indoor air quality. And they're saying that the term compliance evaluations that's found in paragraph 1C, in their opinion, in this note, needs some clarification and talks about some required attachments that are needed. And it says, without this documentation is assumed that the costs for IAQ projects would increase substantially. Now, I'm assuming that's cost to the district, so there may not be a statewide fiscal note, but I read this as they're raising a question about, are we sort of granting permission for districts to do things that are likely to result in large increases in cost at the district level, absent the kind of compliance that currently is in place? I'm just, and I don't know, I'm just asking.
Would like to tackle that one. Ms. Doslin.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Valerie Doslin again. While I'd like to try to answer your question, Senator Han, I would ask for some more time for us to look at that section of the fiscal note and respond at a later date, you know, later on today or perhaps tomorrow.
And Senator Han, we will be laying this on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, so there would be time to look at if there is a concern here. But apparently, I believe the department has done. Mr. Nauman, was this fiscal note prepared by the department?
Madam Chair, members, yes.
So the department, who is going on record as supporting this, also did the fiscal note. So hopefully that is somewhat.
And Madam Chair, and I heard the testimony, and it just seems odd that there would be in the assumptions a number of things that they're calling attention to as potentially increasing costs substantially, in their words. And I'm reading that to mean that they're talking about district-level costs, so that they might be saying, well, it's not going to increase our costs, so there's no impact as far as a fiscal note. But it may mean that you districts out there, if you start operating under this regimen, may be involved in projects that would otherwise not be as costly absent the current regimen. So I'm not trying to get specific answers necessarily today, but I think as we consider this bill, some of these concerns in the fiscal note we ought to take a look at and understand more completely.
Senator Han, as a former school board member, do you think your local boards would be paying attention to projects like this, or does the administration just spend willy-nilly on projects?
Chair, no. I think school boards do everything they can to govern the what the districts do, but in large school districts, of course, they have complex budgets as well, and typically they rely on that there are established procedures, and I don't know that the school board would necessarily get into it evaluating the content of contracts for projects, for example, to see whether or not they are, you know, complying with laws, or I just think that level of detail may be beyond most school districts. So I'm just raising the point that as we consider this, some of these things that are being raised in the fiscal note, I think we ought to just make sure we know what they're calling attention to, and that they're not going to cause problems for school districts.
Now we have a representative from Wayzata here too, as well as the superintendent. Any reaction to that?
My name is Roger Schaefbar. I'm the health and safety coordinator for Wayzata Schools. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you again for allowing us time to provide you information. On that one in specific, I really can't address attachments 7 and 8. We move forward with the faith that the department did provide us a fiscal note that would adequately reflect the financial impact to the state, and subsequently, your question is, we'll try to get you an answer.
Great. Thank you very much. I will lay this bill on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Senator Limmer. Did you want to make a further comment?
Chair, Mr. Schaefbauer came here with the intent to give just a little added testimony the way from the Wayzata School District.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt that.
I hate to stop the forward progression of this committee at a critical time, Madam Chair, but
you're welcome to make the statement.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. Again, my name is Roger Schaefer. I'm the Health and Safety Coordinator for Wayzata Schools. The item I wanted to get across to you is that not only this bill is a collaborative effort with the Department of Education for not just the brainchild, Dean Olson, but other members that are here to support the passage of this bill from other school districts. And there's two statewide organizations that have also been participating in the drafting and the various modifications of words. The first group is the Minnesota Association of School Maintenance Facilities. They're the public school facility directors. So in essence, it's the building and grounds directors are in agreement that this bill, members of that organization from Lake of the Wood District to Albert Lea have participated actively in the development and the subsequent work that you see before you. The other organization that I'm a component on or a member of the legislative committee is the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, and that legislative committee does endorse the passage of the proposed language within Senate File 289, as does the MASMIS group. So there's two statewide organizations, school business officials, and in essence the building and ground directors that most health and safety people work under and with as part of maintaining our school facilities to the utmost of code and safety rules that are out there. And subsequently, I just wanted to let you know that there's been a lot of valuable ideas passed around across the state, and this is only one start. As you had alluded to, we have many other ideas.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One last comment,
Senator Lambert.
And that is, as you consider placing this into the omnibus bill, I would hope that in the unlikely event, that we would have any stall of an omnibus K-12 bill, that you may want to consider this to run on its own as well.
We will explore those options.
Thank you.
Our job is to try to get as much good stuff done this session as we can.
Thank you.
We could refer it to judiciary.
Yes. Certainly.
Well, that might bog it down.
I don't even want my members to look at this.
Okay, Senator Hands, Senate File 325. Thank you very much for being here and supporting it well.
Thank you, members, and Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
About, let's say, I haven't
what,
really
what I have is a Senate File 325. I believe you have a copy of the bill. It's a proposal to create a structure that is outside of state government, actually, but its intention is to provide a way for us as a state to encourage and develop significant innovation in education. Now, as I was looking at this bill, and this was actually proposed brought to me as a bill proposal by Education Evolving, and there are some members here that could speak to this if we would like to hear their testimony or their questions. But one of the things I learned is that this bill was actually the result of a statute that we passed in 2009. And I didn't know that. I'd forgotten about that. And there's a document that I was hoping we'd get distributed to the members of the committee, which unfortunately we're not able to do that. But I think Mr. Marcus has made an electronic copy and then sent it to your email. So those of you that have BlackBerries, you may be able to call it up here at the committee. But this is a report that was published January 15th of 2010. It's a report that was required. But back in 2009, the legislature created, I'm just reading briefly from the report, the Innovative School Advisory Council, ISAC. And this was supposed to advise the commissioner and the legislature regarding innovation in the public education arena. And so Commissioner Segrin then appointed a nine-member council as provided by the legislation, who then were charged to go off and do some study provide some recommendations. And this document is a summary of the things that they discussed and the recommendations that they made. The first recommendation that this council made was that the legislature should authorize a new commission to lead the work of creating a culture of innovation in learning in Minnesota. And then it says under that, give it a special name, such as Minovate. So, after I discovered that, I thought, well, this is very clearly then the work of a body that was authorized by this legislature a couple of years ago with the task to try to create an opportunity for us as a state to develop some mechanism by which we can continue the work of innovation in K-12 education. Now, I know some of you members have been here for some time and served in the legislature, and some of us have served on school boards and our districts, and all of us have an interest in education. I think if there's one thing that we all wrestle with in various ways at various times is sort of the inertia that exists in public education and the difficulty to bring about the right kind of culture to create change or to develop new ideas or how those things get brought forward and implemented. Oftentimes, we as members of the legislature, we have ideas and we bring them to our committees or to the legislature, and sometimes, unfortunately, because of the politics that surrounds education, those ideas get caught up in the politics of the institution. And they might be good ideas, but they may, for a variety of reasons, have political attachments to them that make them difficult to accept. And so I think the idea here was to create a body that would be independent of the legislature, whose sole task would be to develop ideas, to develop ways of doing some research, to try to find out how can we bring about different models of education as we've changed quite dramatically over the past several decades in education. How do we take advantage of the technologies that exist? How do we make sure that the models that we're thinking about are going to meet the expectations of the public? How do we do that? How do we find a way to bring forth those ideas? There's some thought that I think I've certainly had at times that this is a job that perhaps the Department of Education should do. And I think that's not entirely unreasonable to assume that, but I also think that's very difficult. And one of the things I came across as I was thinking about this bill and what it was providing for is the term skunk works. Are you familiar with the term skunk works, Madam Chair or members? I see Mr. Nauman has raised his hand. I see Senator Stump nodding yes. So for the record, there's sort of mixed understanding, Senator Daley. Skunk Works is a name that was given to a project that was started at the, I think during World War II, to develop some innovative aircraft for the war effort by Lockheed Martin. And what they did is they cordoned off a little area in their plant and they set it up separately and they sort of blocked it off and they got people working on things, on ideas. And they were outside of the regular chain of command and outside of the management structure, and they were very open to having people from outside of the company come to them and say, well, what about this, what about this? And they developed some very innovative things that were very instrumental in the successful war effort in World War II. Since that time, the term skunk works has developed a little broader application. I'll just read you I don't know if this is an official definition, but it's, quote, it's widely used in business, engineering, and technical fields to describe a group within an organization given a high degree of autonomy and unhampered by bureaucracy tasked with working on advanced or secret projects. And I thought about this bill as perhaps an example of a skunk works for education in Minnesota. And so the bill itself creates a commission to make recommendations. I just want to briefly describe what that structure looks like. It has 12 voting members. The Commissioner of Education would be the chairman of the commission, at least initially. The governor would nominate four voting members, the Speaker of the House would nominate four, and the Majority Leader of the Senate. So the initial 12 members would be chosen by the majority leaders in the House and the Senate and by the governor. They'd have a sort of a revolving length of term. They would be by lottery, selected by lottery, whether it be a two-year term, a four-year, or six-year term. I'm sorry. I think that's the right structure. In addition, one of the commission members may be a state rep, and another one may be a state senator. After the initial appointments, the board continuing will provide its own appointment to its own members. Those members have to be confirmed by the state senate. If you look at subdivision 3, it lists a number of duties that the commission has. The second one is lengthy, describes research and identifying high-priority unmet student learning needs in all parts of the state. On page 3 of the bill, it lists it goes down and lists a number of things. Identify laws and rules that restrict the development of learning models or constrain innovation. So the point is to create a body that is charged with looking at what we're doing today and asking the question, how can we do this differently? How can we do this better? It does provide in the bill that a report would be provided to the legislature and to the commissioner annually, talking about what they've done. And it also provides the opportunity for this commission to structure itself as a nonprofit organization going forward. This itself is not a new idea. We have had examples in the state of creating commissions like this that have become nonprofits. I think you have in your packet a document that talks about Serve Minnesota, which began as a structure similar to this that has become a nonprofit. So this is not a new idea. I did want to mention as well, we had some people who had indicated they were willing to come and testify in support of the bill. Superintendent Dressen from Edina was interested in talking today, but was caught up in a budget meeting that prevented his ability to be here. There's also a number of superintendents from greater Minnesota who support this bill, but for reasons of just time and travel distance, unable to be here for the hearing. But my understanding is that this has, to my knowledge, no opposition and considerable support from superintendents across the state. I have not been in contact with the Department of Education directly, but I am assuming since they produced the report that called for the creation of this structure that they would support the bill. There is a cost that the fiscal note points to that would have some dollars to support part of a position to essentially deal with the reporting requirements that the bill requires. So members, that's my argument here, that I think it is important that we find a way to encourage the development of ideas in a structure that is outside of the normal channels of the department, outside a little bit of the political channels of the legislature, but is tasked with looking at the things we are doing and the things that we need to do and finding ways to think about this and bring ideas to the legislature that perhaps could be turned into policy directions for the future. I think it's important. I think it's necessary. And I would urge your support.
Thank you, Senator Hand. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Hand, I'm a co-author of the bill, so you might be surprised that I still have questions and concerns about various pieces of it, but I do. So a couple things. One is I'm concerned about who appoints the members. Traditionally, with commissions, I prefer to see a balance of the majority party and the minority party. And so perhaps your intention was, in this particular case, thinking the governor is a different party, but I don't think that we ought to think like that. I think we ought to think beyond who's in power. And so I would prefer in Section C, and it looks to me like this would be a contention for laying over, so I don't think we have to be so formal as to offer an amendment, but I would prefer that it would be equal in terms of the speaker pick two and the minority leader pick two, and the same with the House and the Senate in both ways. I think you understand what I'm saying. So that would be line 2.1, 2.2.
And Senator Bonoff and Senator Hand, generally when we create commissions, the State Department's is usually wanted to review that. I don't know if that has changed.
Right.
We would need to check on that. And whenever you have legislators appointed to commissions, the Rules Committee has a say. And
correct.
I think so.
Yep.
The appointing authority probably would need to be modified.
Yep.
To fit that, but that isn't. I mean, it's not meant to be prohibitive. If there was a language that you'd wish to amend in, why don't you give that some thought here in terms of either some partisan balance or bipartisan or however you might want to incorporate that as the wish of this committee. to send on to those, because I think in the other, it's the creation of a commission and the potential financial impact down the way is what the attention is. And then the rules generally monitors, you know, legislators on commissions, but also I think might want to clarify how they want to state the appointing authority at that point.
Very good. So, Senator Hand, Madam Chair, and Senator Hand, if you would be open to, I can work on that and get back to you on that. And then the other thing is
Or while we're discussing, you could do it so that we could amend it before we.
Very good. Okay. And then, Senator Hand, on page 3, line 3.17 to, you know, that whole section in there, it looks to me like you're transferring the authority of the review process for sponsorship to this commission. Is that your intention?
Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff.
Senator Hand.
This particular provision is provision 8, lines 3.17 on page 3 and following. As I understand this is not to transfer the authority of oversight of charter schools to an outside organization. I think what, as I understood this, was to be involved in the process and the review of applications. But I don't know that, and I certainly would not favor having the oversight of a public school taken away from the Department of Education. That is what we have the department there to do. And if this needs to be tweaked to try to make that more clear, I'm certainly happy to entertain any language that you might suggest to do that. There's been some talk I've heard that perhaps that whole provision might better be deleted. I would be open to that as well. The intent is not to transfer authority of governance outside of the department, but simply to recognize that charter schools are a significant part of what we deal with in looking at innovation, and that this outside body may be in a position to provide some help to that, but I don't believe that we should have the governance rest outside the department.
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, I would be more comfortable to move to delete lines 3.17 all the way up until line 3.22, because I have the same concern with regard to administering the federal charter school startup grant funding that's awarded to the state. I think that goes beyond the scope of this. So I move to delete section 3.17 through line 3.21.
And Madam Chair, I have no objection to the amendment.
Is there any discussion of that amendment or any clarification needed for that? Senator Bonhoff has moved that we delete on page 3, line 17 through 21. Any discussion? Any testimony or anything relative to that? Okay, if not, let's all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails.
Madam Chair, could I just return to the point that was raised earlier, Senator Bonhoff, and the structure of the commission? The initial structure is defined starting on the bottom of page 1, the 12 voting members. The Commissioner of Education shall be an ongoing voting member, serve as the chairman. And then on top of page 2, this is where it talks about the 4 members appointed by the governor, 4 by the majority leader, 4 by the Speaker of the House. I don't believe, as I read this, that the intention is for these to be legislators. There is a provision in the last line that says one commission member may be a state representative and one may be a state senator, but I'm not reading that as a requirement that the 4 appointments be from the legislature. In fact, I would say that they can't be, except with the exception of possibly one from each. And so if we wanted to, and I'm open to language to amend this structure and to do whatever we think is best for reasons of trying to preserve the nonpartisan nature of this, I certainly appreciate that. The other thing I want to point out is that going down to paragraph F, where it talks about following the initial creation of the commission, that subsequent to that, that the members would not be appointed by the legislature or the governor, but they would be appointed by the commission itself, and then bring those appointment suggestions back to the Senate for approval. So the idea here, I think, is to create something that is somewhat independent of the politics of the legislature. And so I'm open to doing whatever the committee believes is best to create this structure initially, but I do think it's important that we try to create something that has some independence from what we're seeing in the legislature. I don't want to create a small version of the legislature out there dealing with innovation.
Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, Senator Hannon, in the past, one of the things we've done to handle what you're talking about is, as Senator Olson mentioned, you can say the committee of committees on rule. I don't know the exact wording, but that actually has a bipartisan component to it. I believe it's generally three people. It's two from the majority, one from the minority. And so that body, and I don't know the corresponding structure in the House, but that's and again, those kinds of changes can be done in state government because that's where they have, I know when Senator Rest handled that committee, she had an ironclad, you know, procedure of how you put all those things into language in the bill. So I don't know that we have to put it in, if we agree on the intention, I don't know that we have to do the language because unless there's somebody here who actually knows exactly how that's stated.
Senator Bonhoff, the Rules Committee, Subcommittee on Committees is the essentially the appointing authority recommending back through the rules the service, and that covers any appointments that the Senate makes. The House has probably got a different terminology for it, and it probably could find it in a previous law. To correct that or somewhere along the way get that corrected. But that is a bipartisan group,
right.
And it's, you know, there are appointments made to councils and commissions that are not legislators by that group. So any time that the statute gives the Senate leadership or whatever, however that is, that authority, that's the way in which that is administered and how we have over the past number of years have been sure that we have stated that in our statute to be sure that it is not an appointment of one individual.
And Madam Chair, in that same thought, is it you're thinking that it should say no more than one commission member may be a state representative, nor no more than one may be a state senator, or is it your belief that the way it's written makes that clear?
Well, Senator Bonhoff, to me it says one, maybe. It doesn't say two, maybe, or three. So I think that is fairly clear.
And Madam
but
Chair,
it doesn't say that it has to be. So if the Rules Committee, if that subcommittee would decide that there are other people that should be on it and it is not necessary to have a legislator, they could do that.
Madam Chair, I
don't know if you want to leave that flexibility in there to have a legislator. I think that's for the beginning. There's nothing. I don't think I saw anything down below that would necessarily continue. That might be just there for a bit of comfort and some feedback to the legislature as to how this is getting up and running and how it's functioning, so that they're, you know, comfortable that this is a structure that works and could go forward on its own. That's how I could interpret that.
Madam Chair,
the reason
that's certainly would my understanding and my intention is to make sure that the legislature believes that they have sufficient involvement if they choose to in the initial formation of this. But the intent is to get this to be independent. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes if we create commissions and we populate them with members of the legislature, we really just take our current prejudices and politics over to another body, and I'm not so sure that that's directionally where I'd like to see this go. If we're really going to do this, we ought to set it up and encourage the membership of this commission to be people who have had in their experience in life an opportunity to develop innovative ideas. I'm thinking it might be people from the business community or education outside of the political world, you know, but people who've got a passion for this and some expertise. Not that we don't as members of the legislature, but I think it would be good to have a body that could bring to the legislature some ideas that might be viewed at least somewhat objectively by us as we evaluate the needs we have going forward.
And I think the key, some key lines 212 to 214, I think kind of reflect the nature of the persons that you want to have on there. And, of course, it does indicate that there's people that they may draw on is quite wide-ranging in terms of expertise for input into the commission.
But I'm certainly open, Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff and others, to the initial structure of how we do this, and I certainly want to make sure that we do it in a way that people in the legislature are comfortable with, and that if there's a practice, a tradition of having the Rules Committee or others do it, then certainly let's put that into the requirement of the law.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you. And Senator Hahn, the Commission on Service Innovation didn't have any legislators, and that was by design so that it didn't have a fiscal cost. And I can tell you that it was a great experience, and watching what they came up with, I felt as though they had more freedom once we left the room to be creative, and that worked well. So I think you're on the right track. And my last thing is that it was pointed out to me that when I deleted Section 8 and 9, there was a corresponding sentence that related to that section on lines 3.27 halfway through, beginning with the commissioner, and then going through the end of line 3.29 that would also need to be deleted.
So
I move that we delete that.
That's correct. I did not notice that.
Senator Bonhoff moves an amendment to amend beginning at lines 3.27 after the period, delete the language to the end of the sentence, delete 3.28 and 3.29. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Ms. Youngers, do you have any suggested language that would address the Senator Bonhoff's other concern?
Madam Chair, members, at least for the from the Senate side, the appointing authority usually is the verbiage is subcommittee on committees of the Senate Committee on Rules and Administration. Usually say that instead of the majority leader of the Senate. And one thing you could do too in the sentence, if there's a worry, the 2.4 to 2.5 sentence about the members may be a state representative, or maybe you could say only one. Putting the word only, if there's a concern there's going to be more, or but that's kind of up to the body.
So do you want to state that in the form of a motion? Would you like that to be the case?
Please, as
okay,
stated.
And then we can worry about the House language.
Thank you.
Ms. Youngers.
Okay, then, Madam Chair and members, I'd say delete majority leader of the on 2.1. And then insert the subcommittee on committees of the Senate Committee on Rules and Administration. And then on 2.2, delete Senate.
You have that? Do all of you have that information? Senator Bonhoff moves that amendment. Is there any discussion? Not all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion on the I think Senator Ray, did you have a question? I think
thank you. Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Hahn. Thank you for agreeing to do this amendment. I was also very concerned about the eighth provisions. Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. I think that this whole issue around charging the commission with administration of federal charter school startup is kind of complicated, so I appreciate that. That was my first question. But I have a question, Senator Hahn, about the last part, subdivision 5, delegation to nonprofit, and I would like to to hear your thoughts and your intention with respect to having the commission create a private nonprofit. And it just really doesn't say much about what else, but just simply says that they shall create a private nonprofit. And since the legislation doesn't elaborate, I need to hear your thoughts as to why do you think that that needs to happen, and if we've done something like that. Because I envisioned, you know, the commission advising and, you know, putting reports that will hopefully bring us some light to some very tough questions we have about education, and they can do that directly, you know, to the legislature or the governor or the community in general. And so why is that they need to create a private for-profit?
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, thank you. It's a good question. I think the idea is that to do the work that is charged in the duty, some of the work, I think, would logically require some funding. And the question is, if you create an entity and you say, go do something, and something that you're telling them to do could require resources to get that done, then you raise the question, well, how will they do that? One way would be to have the commission be subject to the budgetary process of the legislature and come to the legislature to seek funds. Now, in my opinion, when you do that, then you insert the commission right back into the sort of political environment that we are creating the commission to try to avoid. So one way to do that is to create a nonprofit that has the ability to do things such as raise money and to create some independent status as an entity that would allow it then to have the ability to operate, to define what projects it's going to work on, how they're going to be funded, to what extent they're going to be funded. And as I said, I think there is at least some examples in the past where we have created similar structures. Serve Minnesota is mentioned in the handout that you have in your packet that began very similarly, became an independent nonprofit organization that has done a fairly good job, at least according to this handout, of seeking and finding funding sources outside of the legislature. So I think that, in my view, is the reason to do this, is to, again, reinforce the ability of this commission, this organization, to be independent and to really be able to do the duties that it is that we're asking it to do without having to be, in effect, a client of the legislature and seek to get its funding and its projects, in fact, approved by the legislature.
Thank you, Senator. Follow-up. So,
Sorry
if I am confused about this. So this fiscal note that we have for funding is given to this group, and they have that financial connection with us, but yet they will be separate. How would that work?
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff, the fiscal note assumes that there would be some support from the Department of Education, I think primarily because the Commissioner of Education is asked to serve as the chairman, at least initially. And I would think that there is also a duty for the commission to prepare some report and present it to the Department of Education. And so they're contemplating some kind of a support staff cost at the Department of Education. I frankly don't know if that would be ongoing, if it would only be something that would happen initially. I'm not certain, but I think they're anticipating, because there's some direct involvement by the commissioner, at least initially, that there would be some cost to support that.
Thank you. Just a word of caution, Madam Chair and members. I think that this is something that we need to think about very carefully. You know, as you know, Senator, I was an employee of the state for over 17 years, and sometimes we end up with models where, you know, the state employees are assigned to do the work. We have to do it because we're supposed to produce these reports for you, and yet, you know, we have other agencies that are responsible, or sometimes, you know, consultants that are hired to do this. And so I think that it would be beneficial to have some language that states, you know, that the responsibilities of producing a report where, you know, staff members are assigned to do the work, it's not part of the work that the nonprofit does, or something like that, that clarifies that specific those specific responsibilities. And, Madam Chair, if I may, Senator Hahn, I would like to ask for some change in the language you have in page 2, line 213. See if you will be willing to accommodate my request. You have the decommission, to the extent practicable, should reflect geographic and ethnic representation. And I understand the reason for why you want to be cautious to say to the extent practicable, and I understand the reasons, I believe. But I would like to know if you would be willing to delete that language and simply say that it should reflect geographic and ethnic representation. Hopefully, they will do it in a practical manner. And the reason I say this is because I think they need to make an effort to have representation from the different regions of the state and also from the different ethnic groups that are represented in our school systems. So,
Senator Torres Ray, I think just one response. I don't have any problem with removing that language. But I think both our geographic and our ethnic representation may be hard to be accommodated by the size of the group. And, it, you know, you could get rather large if, in fact, you were going to try to be representative. And I'm not sure how they were doing it. I think that's why there's probably that cautionary expression. There's certainly no intent to ignore that. But what's your, Senator Hahn, what's your?
Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, and I appreciate your comment. And I guess my initial thought would be to say, well, I think we're trying to accomplish that with the language we have. The thing that I'm a little concerned about is creating an appointment of commissioners or a language in the statute that require commissioners to fulfill some sort of a designated role either by geography or by ethnicity. And I think that's the concern I have. If you put something into the language that says, well, they must show, reflect geographic or other kind, then the question is, well, how do we know that? How do we do that? And then there has to be some way to make sure that we are, do we do it by congressional district, for example? Do we have to make sure that there is a representative from each congressional district? I mean, some of the things that we run into periodically when we talk about regions, for instance, could become a part of the makeup of the discussion of how do we decide who should serve on this commission. My point, my hope would be that the commission would be focused solely on innovation and finding people who are innovative, and wherever they may come from in the state and whatever they may be as far as their background, that to me is a secondary importance. I think given the duties that they're charged with, the kinds of things that we're asking them to provide in terms of recommendations to the legislature, I think it would be very difficult for them to do that, to do their duty, without being able to reflect the fact that we have rural districts and metro districts and large city districts and suburban districts, and that we have a huge variety of recent immigrants and people who have been here for quite some time and different kinds of populations and cultures. All those things, I think, would have to be reflected in the duties that they are undertaken to provide. So I don't know that they can ignore those considerations, but I am a little concerned about putting into the law a requirement that as they select commissioners, that their priority has to be to look at where people live, for instance, rather than are these people who are committed to innovation and education. So that would be my only caution, but I'm certainly willing to accept the will of the committee on what your judgment thinks would be best. But I do believe that language is there to try to provide the very thing that you're asking for, consideration of these things as much as it can be done. But my emphasis would be on innovation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a follow-up, one of the issues, thank you, Madam Chair, that becomes clear, I think, as we move forward, and I think Senator Hahn and members that have been in this committee, is that oftentimes this is being interpreted as we couldn't find a person who actually reflects the ethnicity and race of the children that are being served. Most of the boards that are being appointed today, if you see the composition of these boards and commissions, are predominantly white. They do not reflect the ethnic population of the districts they serve, including my own district in Minneapolis, really. So I think that to the extent that we can, we do have to send the message that people need to look for opportunities to bring people who have the expertise, absolutely, absolutely, that have the expertise on the issues, that have the background and the credentials to submit, you know, recommendations. I absolutely agree. But, you know, we have some experts in the community, for instance, about ELL issues that are critical to many, many districts in the state of Minnesota that are not participating right now. and I'm concerned about it. And so I feel very strongly that we need to make an effort. But I do understand, Senator Hand, your point of view, absolutely, that, you know, that doesn't have to be the driver, so that we, when we look at ethnic and geographic, you know, we get so consumed with that then we don't move forward. So I hope that we find a balance. But, you know, the language that you have right now, to the extent practicable, it just kind of brings, I can guarantee you that what the result is going to be is that it was not practicable, so we couldn't include people. So I receive a note, perhaps, that the commission, a preferable language will be the commission should reflect geographic and ethnic balance, perhaps, so that, you know, it's not necessarily representation, so that addresses your concern with respect to not having to have it, but having balance. Maybe that would be something that maybe you could...
Well, you're reflecting on that. Could I just, where the time is moving, we have one more bill. Now, I have reserved a room for committee tomorrow morning. Or would you rather, I think the next bill that we have, we've got a few more people that want to talk on this one. The next bill was one of those that was a victim of the bill that didn't go anywhere last year, so it shouldn't take very long. Would you prefer to give a few more minutes and finish? Let's see if we can wrap this up. You're cogitating. Can I move on to Senator Wieger? And there was, I think, Senator Sieben?
Ma'am Chair, I'd love to move your bill right now, too, that foundation. But, Ma'am Chair, briefly, you know, Senator Hand, you've indicated you're going to work with the stakeholders, and it's going to be a part of the brew. So I would just wait on some of the questions. I'm really curious as to how the department, if they've signed off on this, and there's various technical aspects. But if you're going to work with the stakeholders, let's process our inquiry to you and bring it back in a few weeks.
Thank you. Senator Sieben.
Madam Chair, thank you. I will try to be brief. I'm trying to understand what the role of the Commissioner of Education is on the commission, Senator Hand. I was just looking at, like, 118 members may be reappointed upon the completion of their current term for one additional term. And then the Commissioner of Education shall be an ongoing voting member. But then later it says, on 217, commission members, with the exception of the commissioner, may serve a maximum of two consecutive terms. And so I'm just not clear on what the commissioner's role is.
Yeah. Senator Sieben, I'm not sure if we've checked out the longevity of commissioners of education, but they do change.
Right, but Madam Chair, I understand that.
I mean, the position, they're saying that it's important for the position to be on there.
That's what's unclear,
okay.
I think. I'm not clear if the Commissioner of Education is always going to remain the chair and a voting member of the commission.
That's on the first page, 123 and 24.
It's just until they choose the chair.
Madam Chair and Senator Sieben, yes, the lines 123 and 1.24, the commissioner will serve as the chair for the first year, after which the chair will be selected by the members. But the idea would be that the commissioner, or whoever that commissioner may be, recognizing that that role will change in terms of the individual, but that the role of the commissioner shall always be present as a part of a voting member of the commission.
Madam Chair, just to follow up, then on lines 2.3, it says the Commissioner of Education shall be one of the governor's appointees and shall serve a three-year term. That seemed to be, that was confusing then, or contradictory to that, I thought.
Madam Chair Senator Sieben, I think what that's speaking to, if you go back on page one, the first, starting on lines 1.15, it talks about for the initial appointments, the terms of the board members should be one year for a third of the members, 2 years for a third of the members, and 3 years for a third of the members. So the idea is the commissioner would be one of the members selected by the governor and would have a three-year term. The other members of the commission would all by lottery get designated whether they have a one or two or three-year term. And that's just for the initial appointment of the commission. Following that, terms are 2 years. And with the exception of the commissioner, no individual member can serve more than two consecutive terms. And the commissioner being a position, not an individual, obviously.
Madam Chair, and
Senator Seaton,
I don't want to hold this up here, but I think perhaps somewhere that should be clarified that the Commissioner of Education is an ongoing member of the, is one of the 12 members. Somewhere in the language, maybe on 2.17, where it says, with the exception of Commissioner of Education, could add who is an ongoing member or something like that. I don't know. I just think it's not really, that's not quite clear. Otherwise, everything fine.
Thank you, Senator Seaton. Is there
a motion?
Do we need to clarify that now, or should that be?
Move it.
You have a? Okay, Ms. Yonker.
Madam Chair, members, you could insert a sentence at 2.18 after the period. The Commissioner of Education shall be an ongoing member of the commission.
I would move that language, Madam
Thank
Chair.
Thank you, Senator Seaton. Then, is there any discussion to that motion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. So, is there any further discussion? If not, this we can move on. Senator Hand, I don't know if it needs, because of the commission nature, if it needs to go on to finance or to the state governments, because we haven't got Ann Rest chairing that to ask for every commission, but they could catch it somewhere along the way, but it would need to go on to rules.
So we need to make a motion to move it to rules?
I think so.
All right. Madam Chair, then I would move that we pass Senate File 325, recommended to pass and sent to the Rules Committee.
Madam Chair?
Senator Weir.
Would the intent then after rules for appointment jurisdiction that it be returned here?
I think that would be something you would bring up to rules, yes, if you'd like it to be a part of our actions here rather than travel on its own.
Madam Chair and Senator Weger, that would be my thought, that this would be a part of the final bill.
So I think
the idea would be to send it to rules to make sure that if they have questions about how to do the appointments or if they believe it needs to go to some other committee. But eventually I would like to see it back here for inclusion in our final bill.
No, that understanding. Thank you.
Thank you. So all in favor of that motion?
Aye.
Aye. With aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The bill is adopted. And I will turn the gavel over to Senator Nelson, and we will, because I assumed I heard you wanted to deal with this bill, and we'll get it on its way.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 315, as I mentioned, has been around this this curve before, and it is a request by the TIES organization to extend the lease levy that has been provided for them to acquire the facility that they now reside in, to be able to continue with maintenance, as it is an older facility. And so without saying any more, I will turn it to somebody who can specifically address that, Representative from TIES. If you just give your name for the record. And
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Elizabeth Schweitzer, Executive Director of TIES. TIES is a consortium that's owned by 31 school districts, 41 school districts that own the assets and liabilities of TIES. We purchased the building in year 2000 for $4 million. It's now valued at $13 million. And now with the current changes to this legislation would change it from the ability to purchase a building to the ability to make and changes capital improvements to the building. So it actually reduces the liability from purchasing a building at no limit to reducing it to make maintenance for a maximum of $632,000 per year for 10 years.
Thank you, Ms. Schweitzer.
And Madam Chair, I do have an author's amendment on page 3. It's an oral amendment. Page 3, line 4, change 2012 to 2013 and 2022 to 2023. It's delaying both of those by 1 year.
Senator Olson, could you tell us what line that is on? Where are you?
At 3.4.
Yes? And again, can you repeat that? I just couldn't hear it, I'm afraid.
Yes, I would move to delete 2012 to 2022 and insert 2013 to 2023. The reason for that change is that as the project, that would be the first time that it would actually be reflected in the as a levy, property tax levy.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Are there other comments on this particular?
Just an author's amendment. So
okay.
Usually that courtesy is afforded us.
All right. Senator Olson moves the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed.
Opposed. Same sign.
Aye.
Madam Chair?
Yes, I can tell there's some confusion here. Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, I just sometimes when we talk about taxes payable versus fiscal year, it gets a little confusing, and I know that you've already adopted the amendment, but I just thought I would clarify that what you intend to do, but with that amendment, is begin the taxes in fiscal 14, because you have to subtract a year from your fiscal years to get your taxes payable year. So if the intention is to begin in fiscal 13, you'd want to leave the language as is.
Yes. Senator Olson, what's your intention?
Well, Madam Chair, I was taking orders from the TIES folks, and I've heard from one side and the other side. This gentleman is in agreement with Mr. Nauman, so could we reconsider that motion and remove it?
Yes, I believe there was someone who voted against that who can make that motion. Senator Wieger?
Actually, then I wasn't on the prevailing side, so
that isn't requirement of committees.
Okay, so we'd like to reconsider Senator Olson's amendment. And all those in favor, signify
aye.
By saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Opposed, no. All right, let's reconsider your amendment, Senator Olson.
So I withdraw the amendment.
Okay, the amendment has been withdrawn. All right, is there any other discussion? Or do you have another testifier, Senator Olson? All right. Any question from committee members? Any other questions? All right. Seeing none, Senator Olson moves that Senate File 315 be recommended to pass. It doesn't need to be referred anywhere. Oh, we'll just lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill then.
That's right. That's fine.
All right.
Thank you.
Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you, members.
No meeting tomorrow.